Good morning and welcome, or I mean morning if it's morning where you're living and where you're listening to this and when you're listening to this, or good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Stack Trace, to our WWDC 21 special. I am John Sundell, and I am of course joined, like always, by my good friend Mr. Guy Rambo. How's it going, Rambo? Are you enjoying the conference so far?
Hi John, yeah, I'm doing great. I'm enjoying the conference. And gosh, there's a lot of stuff to learn about.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think both of us had this feeling after the keynote itself that, you know, there weren't that many like groundbreaking new things this year. We didn't really get this feeling that, you know, everything has changed. It wasn't like WWDC 2019, where, you know, after watching the keynote, I was like, whoa, this is a lot, right?
Yeah.
There were a lot of great updates, I think, during the keynote, and overall, it was a really good show, but I didn't get that feeling that, you know, there's just this a lot of groundbreaking stuff. But then once you start looking into the APIs and all of the kind of fine-tuning they've been doing and all of these extra new convenience APIs and things like that that they've added, it's actually quite a lot.
Yeah, and I think for regular users, it may not look like a lot when you just watch the keynote. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff, which we'll go through here, recapping the keynote and then going through our opinions. But when you look at all of the new APIs and stuff that developers can adopt, it's not like one or two big things. Like you mentioned, 2019, we got like SwiftUI, Catalyst, all that good stuff. But this time we have a lot of small things. And to be fair, like, some of them are not that small. Like, concurrency in Swift is not small. And we knew we were going to get it. So, yeah, there's a lot of small stuff. And it looks like the breadth of API that can be adopted this year is larger than usual, because there are many years where they introduce new APIs, and depending on the type of app you do, there isn't much for you there. Like, oh, there's this shortcuts thing, but I don't really do shortcuts. Oh, there's like a Siri thing, but I can't really use that because my app doesn't really make sense with Siri. But this year, it's like one example, they introduced new screen time API, and that's something we were planning on implementing for Chibi Studio, like parental controls within the app itself. And now they have an API for that, so that's perfect for us. There's other stuff that we want to adopt as well. There's stuff I want to do in AirBuddy, which we're going to talk about. So there's lots of like little things, but when you sum all of that up, it's a lot of stuff. And by the way, if you're a developer and we're starting to mess with your anxiety there, remember, read John's article, relax. You don't have to learn everything this week, not even this month, not even this year. There's time. Don't worry.
Yeah, the article you're referencing there is, I posted an article on our WWDC website called Avoiding WWDC Stress. And this is something that I've been feeling quite a lot, like over the many years that I've been following WWDC. And I've also heard from many other people that, you know, although the conference is really exciting and it's this like community event, everyone's getting together, especially if you're on Twitter, you're just seeing like the hashtag WWDC21. They're just like hundreds of tweets per minute, you know, especially once the videos come out and stuff like this. Like, there's a lot of excitement around the conference, and I think that's amazing, especially in these times when most of us are working from home. It's really nice to feel like connected to the community and to have all that excitement going on. But at the same time, to your point there, Rambo, it can feel a little bit overwhelming when you have all these new things kind of, you know, just dumped at you as one thing, right? Like, it's, here's all these new APIs and here's everything that's new. And it can feel like you need to learn this immediately. Otherwise, you're going to be like outdated as an iOS developer. But that's very, very rarely the case. There are very few projects that require the very latest APIs from day one. Most projects will take years before they can even start adopting some of these new APIs. And that's fine too. Like you said, we have to remember that this is not content for this week. This is content for like the next year, or, you know, more than that, like the next couple of years and so on. So yeah, take your time, enjoy the conference, be excited, have fun, follow along as much as you can, but don't be stressed about it.
Yeah. When the schedule was posted yesterday after the keynote, I did something that I always do, which is go through the schedule and start favoriting the sessions I want to watch. And I think I even mentioned that to you, like, there's no way I'm watching all of this week. Like, there are sessions that happen at the same time. And of course, I can watch the recording later, but like, there's just so much stuff. I will have to be prioritizing. And I kind of wish that I had implemented in my WWDC app for macOS, like a priority favorite type thing. Like, oh, this is something like I want to watch now. And this is something for like a month later or something, because there's just so much stuff. And this year, especially, I think I favorited like 90% of the sessions. So there's a lot to go through.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this when I was talking to Sean Allen on Swift by Sandel during the last episode, that my goal is always to watch all of the WWDC sessions, but I don't think I've ever done that. Like, it's really hard to find the time to, you know, sit down and watch all of those sessions. Even if they are all of very high quality, you really have to prioritize, like you said. And also, important to remember, they're not going to go away, right? It's not like they are only available this week and then you can never access them again. You can fire up a session and watch it like, you know, 6 months from now. That's completely fine. Yeah. And I just wanted to get back very quickly to what you said there earlier around, it feels this year that they are kind of more APIs in general, or like the breadth of APIs is kind of wider. And I definitely agree with that. And I think also it's cool to see that the feeling I get from seeing many of these new system features is that they also have an API on day one, which sometimes is not the case. Where, you know, take the new SharePlay features, for example, that Apple announced, right? It would be very typical for them to announce a bunch of features for their own apps that work with FaceTime and sharing and all those kind of things, but to then wait with a public API until like 1 or 2 years later. But with that and with the new screen time things and other things as well, it feels like there are APIs available on day one, which I think is absolutely amazing. And I would honestly rather Apple continue following this strategy where they might announce a smaller set of features each year, but they're all kind of very heavily integrated into the system and they have rich APIs on day one. I think that will probably yield a better user and developer experience kind of in the long term as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's a discussion to be had there if this is due to the antitrust pressures they've been feeling. But this is a happy episode, so let's not go into that.
Right. No court talk allowed.
Yeah. But regardless, like, it's good that they're doing this. It's awesome that they're doing this, because if they don't, and this was the way it used to work, I mean, until pretty much last year, where there would be like this super cool new feature. Oh, but you can only use it on iMessage or with like the built-in
Apple Music,
Apple stuff like Apple Music or Apple TV. And like, that's almost like not announcing or not launching the feature. That's almost like launching the feature the next year, because then in the year following the announcement, then they would introduce APIs for third-party developers. And you'd feel sad because you'd see this super cool announcement and get super excited, but then, oh, but I don't really use Apple TV, I use Netflix. My friends are not into Apple TV, they're into TikTok or something, and now there's API, so hopefully lots of apps will adopt this. One of the media consumption that I do the most is YouTube. And unfortunately, I think if they adopt this, it's probably going to be in like 2023 or something, because they're usually pretty bad about this stuff. I mean, they don't have picture-in-picture yet. So yeah, not holding my breath for that. But it's really cool that they're doing this. I like that new features get API immediately. And I'm looking into whether I could use this for something, because it is really exciting. So should we actually start going through the announcements?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. I just had one more comment to make around this kind of disconnect between what we saw in the keynote and then what we discovered as we started diving into like the API diffs and watching the State of the Union and reading some of the documentation and so on. A lot of the features also this year, especially like the concurrency stuff, is much, much more lower level than the features that are typically like highlighted during WWDC. Like, your users are not going to notice if you use combine or async await, right? Like, hopefully not. So I feel like that also contributes to this. Like, when we saw the keynote, there was, you know, a slightly smaller set of user-facing features, perhaps, or maybe not smaller set, but maybe not as kind of groundbreaking or like changing the system as something like widgets, for example, when it came out, right? Mm-hmm. But the developer things, I think, are really cool. So from my perspective as a developer, I'm very excited about this year's WWDC. And yeah, it's a lot of fun to start diving into it right now and covering it. So to your point, let's actually get into it. But first, let's take a very little quick time here and reveal our poker results.
Ooh.
Because, of course, we were playing poker on the previous episode about what we thought that Apple might announce. And I don't have a good kind of history here in front of me around our previous scores, but I think this might have been the highest amount of points that we've collectively gotten, both of us, of any poker game.
Nice.
I think we got, you know, at like 80% or something of all our picks were correct, something like that. So it was very cool to see, and we did both very, very well.
And this is especially interesting considering that this year we had like almost nothing in terms of leaks and rumors to go with, like, for our poker bets. So we really were just like guessing.
Yeah, exactly. So just to run through the bets very quickly, and then of course we will dive into many of these announcements in more detail now that we're going to discuss the keynote and the State of the Union itself. The first thing we were betting on was that Apple would release a new pro-level iPad app. This is something that I've been feeling should have happened already, like for a couple of years now, but still, there was nothing there, unfortunately. We got Swift Playgrounds, got a pretty big update. It can now build apps, which we'll talk about, but I would still not consider that a pro-level iPad app, so we both lost that bet.
Mm-hmm.
The iOS lock screen did get a significant redesign. I think the new notification things are like a pretty big deal. And also the thing you specifically called out, Rambo, that you think that the Do Not Disturb banner is too big, it actually got fixed. So that's really, really nice.
Yeah, super happy.
And widgets can now be placed anywhere on the iPad home screen. So that's another bet that we got right. We did not get system level support for running virtual machines on the iPad. No, this is not the year of Linux on the iPad. not this year. Maybe next year. We did, however, get multiple asynchronous APIs within Apple's SDKs that were updated for Swift 5.5's concurrency features. That was a pretty big focus. It even appeared in the keynote as well, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of that in the State of the Union. And we got Test Flight available for macOS as well. So that was our first three rounds. Overall, we did really well. We just had two bets that we didn't win. The rest of them were all good.
Nice.
Yes. So now we're moving into the high stakes round, where I'm actually surprised that my bet there, I was betting that we would get a lot of new features related to 3D or spatial audio. And I was really surprised to the extent that that was right. Like, it feels like they mentioned spatial audio in almost every segment of the keynote. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting that. But in hindsight, they like spoke about spatial audio in every opportunity they had.
Yeah, it really felt like it was one of those kind of buzzwords almost, right? Like, it feels like it's something that people are starting to realize, like, that's a cool thing, you know, oh, do you have spatial audio? Have you heard it? And so on. Because it really makes a difference for certain kinds of media, right? So it was really cool to see, like, it being also introduced to do things like more clearer voice audio when you're on a FaceTime call and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But your high stakes bet unfortunately did not come to pass, and that's that we did not see a new MacBook Pro, which I think there was like rumors back and forth on for a while, right? Like, some people said summer, and then it was up to interpretation. What does summer mean? Does that mean WWDC? But it did not.
I should have listened to German. German was right.
German was right. And then moving into our rounds 5 to 6, we did not see more interactive widgets. Unfortunately, I wouldn't say, like, there was some new additions to widgets, but no, not a lot of new interactivity. I wouldn't classify it as that.
True.
We did get a new dedicated API for rendering to the always on display on the Apple Watch, which was really cool. That's something that I think both of us want to explore more.
Indeed.
The iPad did gain new multitasking features. No external monitor support, but thankfully I was hedging my bet there. So I also included multitasking, and we did definitely get that, which I think the new multitasking features look really great. And speaking of redesigned system features, we also saw a new iOS push notification system that gives users more control over notifications, which was one of your bets. So that one was also true. And then moving into the final all-in round, both of our picks there were true as well. So the app library came to the iPad, which was my bet, and your bet that the Shortcuts app would come to the iPad, which was something I only gave 1 point, you gave 5 because it was all in, but that also happened, so that was really, really cool. So overall, good poker game. And Rambo, are you ready to hear the final scores?
Let's go. I think I won. Of course I did.
You always think that you win. You got 22 points, woohoo! Which, like I mentioned, was a really, really good score. Not sure if that's your best one, but it was a very, very good score. However, Rambo, I got 33.
Okay. Well, congrats, I guess.
Thank you. I must say, like, I love these poker games, like, regardless of who wins, when we both get, like, a high score. Like, that's always fun when we don't get minus points like we got a few years back. That's kind of, you know, sad. But this was a great poker game. Hope you all had fun listening to our poker episode, following around with our bets. But now, let's actually dive into the announcements. Rambo, where should we start?
FaceTime.
Yeah, let's go in chronological order, right?
Absolutely.
So what's new in FaceTime?
So FaceTime now gets spatial audio. So this is where when you see the standard user interface of FaceTime with multiple people, like a group, each person gets a little space on screen. And apparently they're doing something to like kind of make it sound like the sound is coming from where the little picture of the person is on screen, which is super cool, and I can't wait to try it out. So that's one of the things they're doing. They're also doing voice isolation, and the demo they gave with like a leaf blower going on in the background was super impressive. Not sure to which extent that can be believed, but they're usually fairly straightforward with their demos. They usually don't show like impossible stuff, so That should be good. So what do you think about those?
I love that demo wasn't perfect either. Like when the person turned on like this voice clarification feature with spatial audio, it wasn't that the audio was like studio quality, right? No. Like you could still hear artifacts of that leaf blower going on in the background, which to your point, like it just showed a more realistic kind of use case. Although, I mean, I don't know how many people walk around with a leaf blower inside of their house, but still, you know, it could be a vacuum cleaner, it could be other, you know, equipment that makes a lot of noise. So I just thought that was great to like see not a perfectly ideal, it sounds amazing, like it was recorded with the studio microphone. It actually sounded like someone would sound on a FaceTime call.
Yeah, and yeah, like you mentioned, when it was turned on, you could notice that there was the noise being applied to the audio, which it's the reality. Like there's no magic, so it has to be done somehow, which makes me think that that was actually an audio from a real FaceTime call with this feature and not like simulated using like an audio editor or something, which Apple is usually pretty good at doing. Like when they show pictures, this has been taken with an iPhone, it is a picture taken with an iPhone, unlike some other manufacturers, which we won't mention. But
yeah. It might have been taken by the phone, but then photoshopped for 15 hours afterwards.
Yeah, we also got grid view. So yeah, that's good. Many people don't like the random arrangement of heads in the FaceTime call. So that's good. But then we go to like what I think was the real surprise. So one of the reasons why I think, and I'm pretty sure we talked about this before when the whole like Zoom stuff was going on, is that one of the reasons why FaceTime is not mainstream or is not used as much for meetings is because there's no way to like schedule a FaceTime call with someone. Like, I mean, I can set up a calendar event and invite you through your iCloud account, but then it's just you there, and then I have to like go in and pick a phone number and call you manually. But now they're introducing web links and scheduling for FaceTime. So I can schedule like a meeting with someone, and I can actually put a link in the meeting where they can click the link and join the meeting just like it works with like Zoom or Google Meets or something else. And the best part is that they do not need an Apple device. they can join from the web, and this includes from the web on Android. And this is amazing.
Yeah, I think this is really, really cool. And I definitely agree with you that that's been a big hurdle to using FaceTime for these types of use cases. Like, you have to verify that the person not only has an Apple device, but will join the call from an Apple device, right? Like, Sometimes people might have an iPhone, but they want to join the call from their PC, laptop, right? Or something like that, or Chromebook or something else. So it's really great, like, for a service like this to be able to be more kind of universally used. Like, having it on the web is really key. And I'm really glad that Apple did this. I am really curious to look into more, like, if they've integrated this further, like Google does with Google Calendar, for example. Like, When you schedule a meeting with Google Calendar, you automatically get like a Google Meet URL attached to the meeting. I'm wondering if it's going to be something similar, if you can schedule a meeting in the Apple Calendar app, and it would then like create a web link and schedule a FaceTime call for you and stuff like that. Like, that's something that we have to test for ourselves to see how that works. But yeah, this is a great move, I think. And, you know, it's kind of starts to show that Apple, besides their Apple TV effort and Apple Music and things like that, like their services, that they are willing to start moving things more outside of their ecosystem. Like, iMessage, I think, is the big one that people have been talking about. Like, will we ever see iMessage on the web or on Android or something like that? But having FaceTime now take that leap, I think that's really good news.
So, real-time follow-up, I just tried here on Apple Calendar, and it doesn't seem to create like a link, a FaceTime link for you in the Calendar app. But again, this is beta 1, so who knows? But I was able to send you an invite link already. So that's already working on beta 1. So, cool.
Nice. So I can join super secret meeting here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So really excited to try this out. And I think, personally, I will probably at least try this and see how it would work for the few video calls that I have with things like, you know, sponsors and customers and things like that, some mentorships that I do and so on. Like, I'll probably try this and see how that would work, because, you know, I like FaceTime. I use it a lot for, you know, talking to my parents and friends and things like that. But it's like, I think a lot of people mostly been used in these kind of more close relationships, like in personal contexts, rather than in kind of your work. But yeah, I'm just really curious to try it out in that work context as well.
Yeah, and another real-time follow-up, I clicked that link on my Mac here, which is not on the beta, and it actually launched like a FaceTime thing where it asks you to enter your name to join the conversation. So looks like it's already up, and this is yet another thing about this year. We mentioned like the small stuff and introducing things with their respective APIs. Many times when they introduce new features like these, it's like, oh, and it's going to be available later this year. Like, the service part is not ready yet. And this year, like, I think even the iCloud Plus stuff is already up, and this FaceTime thing seems to be already up. So yeah, they're doing good there.
Yeah, that's really awesome. In general, I love that as a strategy. Like I mentioned earlier, like, it's for me much better to keep things a little bit more constrained, but do it more kind of end to end and do it properly, rather than do like a, you know, half an effort and then do a lot of different things and kind of spread yourself too thin. So I'm really happy to see this move by Apple this year.
Absolutely.
So speaking of FaceTime, we have another new technology that integrates into FaceTime called SharePlay. And like we mentioned, this is a really cool thing because not only is it available across the system and in Apple's own applications, but it's also available as an API on day one. And based on what they showed us in the State of the Union, it seems like at least if you're using like AV Player and these kind of standard technologies for doing things like video playback or audio playback, it seems to be really easy to integrate. Even those more advanced features that you would think would be quite complex to build, including things like syncing playback positions and things like that, if you're going to watch videos together, that seems to be, you know, that there's a lot of good APIs for that on the system level that you can make those integrations much, much quicker. So before we dive into all those technical details, Rambo, do you want to give us like a very quick recap of what SharePlay is?
Yeah, it's something that I do think many services have been implementing by themselves. And it's an obvious solution for the current times where people are not traveling so much, or many people are not together. And fortunately, that's slowly changing around the world. But yeah, I think this is useful in many contexts. Like if you have a partner and they're traveling and you want to listen to some music together or watch some videos or things like that. Basically, you can start watching a video or listening to music or sharing your screen during a FaceTime call, and you can do that together and in sync with other people, including like a group. You can have like a big group of friends and you can come together and watch a movie together. And this is not limited to Apple services, so like Netflix can implement this, YouTube, like I mentioned. I think they mentioned TikTok, that they're going to implement this, so that's cool as well for those who like TikTok. There's a little hitch with podcasts, though, which Marco Arment mentioned, which is dynamic ad insertion. So there's this thing where some podcasts use a service where ads are dynamically inserted into the episode, and that's usually like based on geolocation of the person downloading the episode and other factors. So you may have like an episode with a 5-minute ad in the middle of it, but I have another ad and my ad is like 2 minutes. So how do you sync between those? So for podcasts, it's gonna be a little bit more tricky, I think, but it's a really good feature regardless. A question I have for you, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but is this, I know that like I, as the maker of a media app, and I'm not, I'm just using as an example, I can offer like this for my media app where people can do share play for videos or music and stuff like that. But is there another side of this API for apps like Zoom, for instance?
So you mean if I could build a SharePlay extension that could then integrate into another video calling application?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure this is for FaceTime, at least in the built-in system. But if I have a messaging app or like a video calling app, can I also do it there? Or is this like the client is only FaceTime?
I believe the client is only FaceTime. I could be wrong. Again, we're recording this like on Tuesday morning, like right after the keynote in the State of the Union. So yeah, we haven't been able to figure out all of the details, and we'll definitely follow up with more details on many of those things, you know, again, for the coming months and years, right? Because these are things we will adopt over time. But I do believe that this is specifically for integrating with FaceTime, not for any kind of arbitrary video calling application. But what is cool, though, is that it's not just limited to media. So you can also get like an arbitrary data stream into FaceTime that enables you to stream arbitrary application data between the participants. So
it's the Chibi Studio API.
It's the Chibi Studio API. So one of the things they showed off in the State of the Union was a demo application where people could draw on the same canvas and that would all be synced. And that wasn't just screen sharing, because if you do that through screen sharing and you just send the inputs over, that would have a lot of latency, right? So if you wanted that nice Apple Pencil, you know, 120 frames per second, or even 240, right? Like it samples at 240 frames per second, I think. If you want that like immediate experience, you couldn't do that over the internet, like as that kind of implementation. So they also have an API for that as well. So one thing I thought about here was, what if you would build something like a shared board game that is not like an online multiplayer game that you send your turn and then someone else plays their turn and sends it back to you, but instead you are on a FaceTime call, you can all play some board game. I'm thinking something like Scrabble would be super fun to connect like your iPad to, you know, a FaceTime call and just play like Scrabble or another kind of those classic board games with your friends while you're on the call, and it's all as if you were playing on the same kind of iPad. I think use cases like that could be really cool.
All right, John, so do the rest of the episode by yourself. I'm going to log off and implement this in Chibi Studio. I'll be right back.
All right, cool. See you later.
Yeah, so this is really cool because, and I should have paid more attention to the platform State of the Union, but I was a little bit busy with some stuff here. But yeah, this is something we've been meaning to do in Chibi Studio for a long time, implement a way where like multiple users could share a canvas and create their own chibis together and draw on their chibis and stuff like that. So yeah, this we're doing this, definitely.
Wasn't this like the original idea for Chibi Studio to have it as an iMessage app where you could do exactly that?
I mean, yeah, and you can actually do that on iMessage to this day, but not many yeah. people do it. But I think with SharePlay, it's a much better experience than iMessage. So yeah, we're definitely doing that. Might be a cool featured opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. So while Rambo runs off and builds that feature and ships it, I'm going to tell you about this week's first sponsor. This week's episode of Stack Trace is brought to you by Clean My Mac from MacPaw, the powerful decluttering app for macOS. It includes 49 different tools that can help you find and delete invisible junk that's been left on your computer's hard drive. Things like unused library files, apps, or even malware, and it can help you tune your Mac for maximum speed. Clean My Mac builds an interactive map of your entire drive so that you can visually spot the largest space wasters and quickly free up space, even if those folders and files are hidden by default in the Finder. It can also help you perform full-scale macOS optimizations, switch off background plugins, free up RAM with just a click if your Mac ever stalls. It can help you manage extensions and help you detect and remove malware and tracking cookies. Now, Rambo, I know that you're often using Clean My Mac yourself, so could you tell our listeners a little bit about how you use it?
Yeah, sure. I do use Clean My Mac to keep my Mac's disk storage under control. As you know, the developers, we have like multiple Xcode versions and we connect multiple devices, and there are the infamous device support folders that get added, and those can be pretty big, and Xcode does not remove them automatically. So one of the things I use Clean My Mac for is to clean up those device support folders, but it's also great for uninstalling apps. I even use it when I want to, like, I want to test a clean install of AirBuddy. I just drag AirBuddy into Clean My Mac because it not only deletes the app itself, but also deletes all of the preferences and other stuff that sticks around when you delete an app. And in general, like, the being able to clean all of the caches at the same time and free up gigabytes of storage with just a single button click is really great. So highly recommended from me.
Awesome. So yeah, you heard Rambo, go check it out. And we've also got a really special discount for you, which will also help you support Stacktrace. If you head over to macpaw.app/stacktrace, you can try Clean My Mac from MacPaw for free. And you can also claim that discount and help support the podcast all in one go. Super cool. Once again, that's macpaw.app/stacktrace to learn more and to get that special Stacktrace discount. And we'll, of course, also leave a link in the show notes as well. But please make sure to use that specific URL since that's how they know that you came from this podcast. Thanks a lot to MacPaw and Clean My Mac for sponsoring this episode of Stacktrace. So, Rambo, have you already shipped SharePlay integration into Chibi Studio? It's all done?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sending you a test flight link right now.
Thank you. And you're sending me a test flight link for Mac?
Yeah, definitely. Of course.
Which we'll talk about later. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's also do a little quick mention of iMessage as well. I mean, there wasn't a lot of new features in iMessage per se, perhaps, but iMessage now kind of connects with a lot of the rest of the system. It kind of also follows that trend of apps becoming less and less like just individual silos and more kind of being able to share their data and connect throughout the system, which I think is something we've been talking about for a long time. And I think it's a very, very good move for iOS to kind of head in that direction in general. So when people send you photos or other kinds of data like links and videos and things like that, it will now start appearing throughout the system through a shared with you feature. So if you go to photos, you can see photos that were shared with you through iMessage. They pop up right in the Photos app and so on, which I think it's really great to have that kind of data being connected, not only to be, if you want to find things that people send to you through iMessage, you have to go to the Messages app. You can now find that in the app where you will actually look at the thing.
Yeah, and I think this will not be used as much as in like, oh, I'm trying to find that thing that John sent me, but more like a casual thing. Because many times, like, someone will send you a link to a podcast or a music in Apple Music, or even like a TV show in Apple TV. and you usually won't look at it right at that moment. And of course, you're going to forget to look at it later. So next time you launch the Apple TV app, even on your actual Apple TV hardware, you're going to see a little shared with you section there. So maybe if John sent me a link to a TV show he likes a week ago and I'm visiting the TV app this week, I'm going to see what he has shared with me. And something I actually like about this, and again, maybe because of antitrust, but even Apple's apps, they actually ask you for permission before, like they I don't remember the exact wording, but it's like, oh, do you want to allow this to see your shared for you thing? So yeah, I think that that's a good thing. And even on the Apple TV, they're relying a lot more. I think this is a theme like with all the betas, because I have the betas running on all device types. I have an Apple Watch, I have a Mac, I have an iPad, I have an iPhone, I have a HomePod mini stereo pair, and an Apple TV 4K, all of them with the betas. So I am able to test the whole ecosystem, but none of them are my primary devices except for the iPhone. The rest are all secondary devices. And when you visit the TV app for the first time on tvOS 15, it will ask you, oh, do you want to see share with you? And when you click OK, it actually shows like a little sheet on your iPhone asking you to confirm and authenticate that, yeah, this is really you and you really want to see the share with you. So I think it's a little nice little touch there, because I mean, in theory, like someone else could be using your TV and you don't want other people to be able to enable this feature for you.
Yeah, I think for the Apple TV in particular, this is really important to have that confirmation. Yeah. Because like you mentioned, like you're probably, if you're living with other people, you're sharing one Apple TV. Everyone doesn't have their own Apple TV and their own TV, right? Their own living room. Maybe if you're living in a castle, but you know, not I'm not. So, you know, for me, that would be the case that I'm sharing it with my girlfriend. So although I don't have any secrets like that, but you could imagine situations where you don't want like any photo that was sent to you to automatically pop up on the TV, right? Like maybe you want a little bit more privacy. So it's good that this is something that's opt-in, and also that you have that clear confirmation as well, so that you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah, definitely. So that's good. And I mean, the usefulness of it will prove itself with usage. So we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I alluded to during our poker review there, like the score review, there was a new notification design being unveiled as well. And there's a lot of new things around notifications in general this year. There's this new design, there's a new focus feature, there's a new summary that you can get once a day that kind of groups your notifications and shows you a summary. There's a lot of things around notifications this year. So Rambo, given your kind of limited time now that you've had to try these things out, does it feel different for you so far? And what do you think about the new design of the notifications in general?
Yeah, I like the new design. They're a little bit more compact. Something I've been using for a long time now is to actually leave a little bit more notifications enabled than I used to, because in the past, I used to only enable notifications from like messages and WhatsApp, like basically just messaging apps. I only wanted to ever be interrupted by notifications from actual people. And within those apps, I actually always disabled notifications for any group messages. So that was how I worked. But then more recently, quite a while ago, actually, I started enabling notifications for like the 9to5 Mac app, because it's kind of like a little RSS reader for me. But the thing I did was enable the notifications only in Notification Center, so they would never interrupt me. So like when I'm not doing anything, or when I want to like do a little pause and read something, I go to Notification Center and there's like a little RSS feed of 9to5 Mac posts that have been posted since I last looked. And that's not only for the 9to5 Mac app. I did that for lots of other apps. But now they're kind of making this official, because they're going to even show you like a little summary. Here's what you missed. And I particularly like the new focus feature, and I've already configured it for work. And I plan on leaving that enabled whenever I'm actually working, because that allows you to do a lot more fine-grained control. So like while I'm working, I don't mind getting notifications from some people. Like and you are on the list, so don't worry about that, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I don't mind getting notifications from some people while I'm working, but from others, like there are some people who I don't want to bother me while I'm working. And there's this new like time sensitive thing that's actually something that has been a problem for me in the past, where I'm gonna be like focused on work and I turn on do not disturb, but I have like a delivery coming up and I get like notifications, oh, this item is missing, do you want us to swap it for whatever, and then I don't get the notification because, and they get super mad, like I don't know how that works in other places, but it happens a lot to me, like where I'll like have my groceries being delivered and there's some item missing, and the person from the grocery store messages me in the app, and if I don't answer, they get really mad. So, but like I'm focusing, I don't want to be bothered by that. But now there's like the time sensitive stuff. So if it's like, oh, your delivery is going to be delayed or your delivery is arriving right now, you're able to make those go through. Only problem though is this seems to be relying on collaboration from the apps themselves. So there are two problems with that. The first one is apps just not implementing this, and then they deliver time-sensitive notifications, but you don't get them because they're not marked as time-sensitive notifications. And there's also the opposite problem, that apps will start marking all of their notifications as time-sensitive because they want to spam you. There is a mitigation for that in the OS, because I did get two time-sensitive notifications. I mean, notifications that iOS deemed to be time-sensitive notifications during this first few hours of running the beta. And it actually shows you, kind of like when you have the provisional permission for notifications, it asks you, like, do you want to keep getting time-sensitive notifications from App X? And you say keep or don't allow. So there's like a little extra layer of protection there. So if apps start abusing time-sensitive notifications, you're able to kind of cut them off.
Yeah, that's really good. I really like that there seems to be more user control here. And that's really welcome because Do Not Disturb has always been kind of a heavy hammer to wield, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like blocking everything. And I'm using Do Not Disturb quite a bit, actually. I'm almost using it like as time boxing, where there's this feature on macOS where you can say enable it for 1 hour. And what I typically will do if I want to work on something just for 1 hour, let's say it's like more like a hobby project or side project that I don't want to be spending my whole day on, which I can very easily do once I get into it and I get really excited about building something. So I will say, okay, let me turn on Do Not Disturb for 1 hour. But as soon as I start seeing more notifications appearing, which I will do definitely because I get a ton of notifications from emails and reminders and all sorts of things, then I know my time's up and I have to kind of get back to work. And I will use that a lot. So I am really looking forward to instead using this focus feature, which seems to be a much better tool for this purpose, where I could say, now I'm going to create a custom focus that's going to be my side project time. And I can enter that focus for 1 hour and then work on the thing. And I can decide like what notifications come through, like you mentioned. And then I can enter my work focus and then my spare time focus or whatever. Like there's more granular control. And the fact that you can also then override those attributes and categorize notifications on your own, at least to some extent, it seems like, I think that's also really, really welcome. Because when I started managing my notifications, it might sound now like I don't have any control over them at all. And the only thing I can do is do not disturb, which is, you know, true to some extent for some notifications. I don't have complete control over them because, you know, I just have so many things I need to do every day. But I do have quite good control over my notifications. I've gone through and I've, like you also mentioned, like you've done, really decided what apps I want notifications from and not. But this kind of provides an opportunity to revisit some of that and to perhaps allow a little bit more notifications under more controlled circumstances. Because for me, at least, notifications can be a huge source of stress. Like, yeah. I even get stressed with my girlfriend when she has like the sound on her phone, and she's messaging with some of her friends, and she just keeps getting like bling 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 bling, like, you know, messages like that. Like, I get really, really stressed out by hearing those sounds.
I am the jerk who's actually gonna tell someone who's doing that to turn it to silent. Like, I will do that because it physically harms me when someone next to me is using their phone with a lot of notifications. I've done it even at work, like the open office plan type of thing, where like someone would leave for lunch and they would leave their Mac without putting it into silent, and you'd hear the Slack notifications come in. I would actually walk up to their Mac and press like the mute key.
I thought you were going to say pull the power cord, throw it out of the window.
I mean, that's what I wanted to do, but yeah, the volume switch had less consequences to it.
Right. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, so this seems like something that we're both excited about. And, you know, having these more kind of productivity features built into the operating system, I think, is really great. You know, it's sometimes a little bit of work setting these things up and managing them. And, you know, sometimes it can feel a little bit like micromanaging everything. But I think once you get a good setup going, it can really have a big impact on your productivity. At least that's been my experience with the existing tools. And I'm really looking forward now to trying these more granular ones, because I think it will be very helpful for me. So yeah, looking forward to trying that out in September.
Nice.
Because I'm not a beta person. All right. So next, let's talk about a really cool technical feature, which is live text. That there's now a lot of improvements to the way text recognition works on iOS. And the system is now able to recognize text in photos and even in the camera app when you're actually taking a picture. And it also includes images that you will find on the web, which is, I think, really great. And although there's been third-party applications that have been able to do some of these features as well, and there are a lot of really good ones out there, you know, this is one of those things that if it's built into the system, it just gets easier to use. It gets just more kind of broadly available throughout the system, which I think is a really good thing in this case.
Yeah, I really like it. You can use the camera to basically read text. And we know that there's Google Lens and there's like tons of other things that had this beforehand. Like, OCR is not a new thing. This is just a nice built-in implementation of OCR for people who don't want to download an app, or people who use iPhones and not Android phones, which is the case here. So yeah, it is a really nice feature. I like how it actually, like, when you select text, so I actually... The reason why I'm a bit salty about the Android thing is because, like, my tweet about this kind of went viral, and there's like 500 replies all saying like, oh, this is on Android. Yeah, I know this is on Android. You don't need to tell me. I like took a picture from a slide in the State of the Union, and I was able to copy the code from the slide. And it's nice.
That's cool.
It actually, like, the selection thing, like, it's the same selection UI as you get in any text field on iOS, but it's actually like 3D within the picture, like kind of follows the skew of like the monitor in the picture, which I thought was super cool. So yeah, really happy with this feature. And apparently there are also APIs so developers can integrate this sort of stuff into their apps, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. To our earlier point that there seems to be, you know, for most of these major system features this year, there seems to be APIs already, which is very, very cool to see. So yeah, this is a cool feature. I don't know if there's many more things to talk about it. I mean, it would be interesting to hear more about the technical implementation details, but that's not something we're going to get, at least not like the morning after the keynote, right? Like, that's something that we probably might hear more about going forward. Yeah. But I think now we can fast forward a little bit, because the next items that we have here on the list, which, you know, we're going chronologically throughout the keynote here, were Spotlight and Wallet. And I think Spotlight, like, there are some cool things there with new contact cards and cards for celebrities and things you might search for. And with the Wallet stuff, like, most of those things I don't think are applicable to either of us, like the identity cards or the car keys with the ultra wideband support. The only one thing I thought about, Rambo, was you now have some smart locks and things like that in your apartment. Do you think you will be using the wallet keys for that?
Well, if August implements that, yeah, I'd love to use it. Sounds like a good feature, but like their auto unlock thing already works pretty seamlessly. Like, they have this auto unlock, but it's geolocation and Bluetooth based, but basically like when I walk out and when I walk up to my door, it unlocks automatically already. So I'm not sure how much this would improve things. I guess when I like, because the way it works, like you have to actually leave the place. So if I just like take like the elevator or go down to like to take the trash out or something, it doesn't really figure out that I left, basically. So when I go back up, I actually have to unlock it manually like an animal. But I actually stuck an NFC sticker on my door and set up a shortcut so I can just like touch my iPhone to the sticker and it unlocks the door.
So what you're saying is that you're using an automation tool to automate your automation.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Sounds good. Cool. Let's do some quick comments on the weather and maps updates as well. So maps is an interesting one because, you know, it seems like a lot of the work that they're doing on maps is kind of manual, right? It doesn't seem to scale very well because they're usually rolling these things out, like the new maps they've been working on for a few years now, I think. And these new super highly detailed maps they showed off with, like, you can see the lines being drawn on the streets and things like that, the trees and everything. Like, I wonder, is there someone like who's in charge of like, every time there's a tree planted in San Francisco, they have to put like a 3D model in the map, you know, just to reflect it. But it doesn't seem to be very, I'm sure it's tools assisted, but it seems to at least have some kind of bottleneck that prevents them from just like rolling this out further and quicker, because it's only in a very select few cities, like, you know, 10 cities or something like that, that the new maps are rolled out to, or 10 countries. I'm not sure, but it's not here where I live, and I don't think it's in Brazil either, right? And it feels like one of those things that will take quite a while for it to get here.
Yeah, what I like about the 3D stuff is that it's kind of cute, like kind of looks like a Nintendo Switch game.
Yeah, absolutely. It did really look like a video game.
Yeah, so it's nice, but like you mentioned, this sort of stuff is really hard to scale, right? So they basically need like a maps team in each place, basically doing all the telemetry or whatever it's called, or cartography, whatever the name of the thing, to do this sort of stuff. And like I totally get it. Like it's not something you could easily automate. This is something that has to be pretty much done manually. But I guess for the places where it's available, it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm just thinking how this will hold up over time if that's the case. Like, if this requires so much manual work or whatever is the bottleneck, like, cities change all the time. Like, at least here where I live now and in Sweden where I lived before, like, there's construction work all the time. They're building new roads and moving things around all the time. So, like, there's already an issue usually with maps being out of date. Yeah. There's been many cases where I've been driving using Google Maps, and all of a sudden I'm just driving in a field according to Google Maps, and Google Maps is like, you have to turn around, you have to take a right to get back on the road, but I'm actually driving on the new road that was built like 2 years ago, you know? So that's already an issue with mapping in general when the map does not reflect reality. And if so much manual work or whatever it is, that so much work in general that is required to make these maps happen, I just wonder, how will they stand the test of time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess they're not that worried about the trees, but right. Yeah, with buildings and roads, of course, things get more complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I might sound negative here, and that's not my intention. Like, I think this is really cool, and I'm really looking forward to the day when this is going to be available here in Poland, and I can go driving in my car with CarPlay.
Feel like you're playing a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, it's almost like playing a video game. Of course, like, driving is a very serious thing, so I will always keep my eye on the road, of course, like a responsible driver. But, you know, it would be great to have those kind of really high fidelity maps. I think that would be really nice. So I am looking forward to the day when that rolls out globally, but it seems to be something that is quite challenging to do at scale. But let's also talk very quickly about the weather app as well. What do you think about the redesign, which is apparently completely built with Swift UI?
Yeah, it looks nice. I like the like more compact design, I guess. Like there's more insets and a little bit more, it feels a little bit fresh than the compared to the other app. It is a bit slow, like it's a bit laggy with the animations and stuff, but I guess that's something that they'll be optimizing until the final release. Something I noticed, and I'm not sure if this is a new thing, but it has alerts for my city. Like, I launched it now and it said like storm and rain alert here, because there is actually a storm coming. So not sure if this is brand new, but I just noticed this now. So yeah, overall, I like it.
That's cool. That could be because of the Dark Sky data, right? Because they acquired Dark Sky a while back. It's been available here for a while, these alerts. Like, I very often get like heavy snow and, you know, the type of alerts that you would never get, Rambo, like heavy snow and like extreme cold I got in the winter and stuff like that. But yeah, it's that's great to have, right? Like, having more easily glanceable weather data that you can use to inform your decision about what to wear and whether or not to bring an umbrella and so on. Like, that's always really, really appreciated. So I'm also really looking forward to trying this new weather app. It looks really great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But next, let's talk about a feature that I think, or a product that I think you are very, very interested in, which is, of course, AirPods. And there was quite a lot of AirPod updates in the keynote, which was really cool to see. And I know that one thing that you've been wishing for a long time, and we finally got it, was spatial audio support on tvOS and on macOS as a little bonus. So spatial audio everywhere. How happy are you right now, Rambo?
Oh, I am extremely happy. By the way, a little meta comment. It's always funny how if Apple says the word AirPods, people say, everybody share locked. Like, no, like they didn't even mention anything about AirPods on the Mac, and it seems to be pretty much the same as on Big Sur. But yeah, spatial audio on the Apple TV and the Mac is really great. I haven't tried it on the Mac yet. I'm not sure if it's actually on the first beta, but it is on tvOS 15. The first beta already includes support for spatial audio. And I tried it yesterday with my AirPods Max, and I love it. Yeah, this is going to be great for me.
Awesome. And they are also now rolling out the Dolby Atmos kind of mastered tracks on Apple Music as well. And you sent me a playlist this morning with some of those songs that have been remastered. And I was just listening to a few of them, and it was quite mind-blowing, actually, just how good it sounds. So I'm not ready to make an official announcement yet, but I think I might consider at least leaving Spotify for Apple Music just based on this feature, because it was really cool to listen in spatial audio using the AirPods Pro to these tracks. So I am, like I mentioned in the poker games, like I was hoping that this would happen, and it did happen, that spatial audio is not just a thing that, you know, you can watch movies on your iPad with your AirPods Pro. Like, that's something that I never felt like that was the end goal, right? Like, the end goal was what we're seeing right now, that spatial audio is getting wide support across all of Apple's platforms, not just for video, but for audio, for voice calls, for video calls, and more as well. So it's really cool. And also the way it integrates with Dolby Atmos as well, I think just gives it a lot of wide applications. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I highly recommend trying out. You don't need iOS 15. Spatial audio on Apple Music is on iOS 14.6 and later, I believe. So yeah, go check it out. You can go in the Explore tab. There's like a featured item there. It's probably going to be there by the time this episode goes out. And if you go to the Search tab where they have like the suggestions, there's a little rectangle for spatial audio, and that one has actually lots of collections of different genres. I was listening to the rock playlists, and Summer of 69 in spatial audio is amazing. Go check it out.
Awesome. Good recommendation. Yeah, we can also leave a link in the show notes to that playlist as well, so you can go check it out. Lots of good tracks on there. Is there anything else on AirPods you want to talk about, Rambo, or are you ready to move on to the iPad?
Let's talk about the iPad.
Let's do this, but before we do, let's take another quick break to thank this episode's second and final sponsor. This week's episode of Stack Trace is also brought to you by our friends at Mac Stadium. For nearly a decade, Mac Stadium has been solely focused on providing developers and Mac enthusiasts with customized Apple-centric cloud solutions. Mac Stadium solutions are trusted by iOS developers, mobile testing teams, and DevOps engineers at thousands of companies around the world, from indie developers to growing startups to large organizations. They have both Intel-based Macs, and when you are ready to move to Apple Silicon, they also have hundreds of M1 Mac Minis in their data centers with three different configurations all ready, and there's instant activation available. Max Stadium is the only cloud provider dedicated to supporting and scaling virtualization solutions on real Mac hardware. They can create private cloud environments with any of the Mac virtualization platforms, including VMware, Virtus Anka, and their own Kubernetes-based Orca platform. And they are constantly improving their services as well. For example, they just recently announced a partnership with Teradici to create high-performance remote access solutions for Mac, which will be available later this summer. Now, Rambo, this is another sponsor that I know that you've been using yourself for a long time. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you use Mac Stadium?
Yeah, I actually have a bit of an announcement to make here during this Mac Stadium sponsorship.
Stacktrace exclusive during sponsorship.
So Mac Stadium is sponsoring the WWDC app for macOS project, which, as you know, is my project. And they have this amazing sponsorship program they're doing for open source projects. And we have been sponsored. So we get an M1 Mac Mini in the Mac Stadium cloud, which... the Mac Stadium offerings were already amazing with the Intel Macs, but now they're even better with M1 Macs. So if you use the unofficial WWDC app for macOS this year, you're actually using an app that's running an API in Docker on Mac Stadium on M1 Macs. So that's bleeding edge, but it's working. I mean, it's really good. So yeah, thanks a lot to Mac Stadium for that opportunity. And if you have an open source project, they also have that program. But other than hosting APIs and other things, you can also do your own custom CI solution using Mac Stadium, which I have done in the past. So yeah, highly recommended from me again.
Awesome. Yeah, isn't it great when we have sponsors that we use ourselves and we love? Like,
yeah.
We're not just recommending them because they tell us to recommend them, because we wouldn't do that, right? Like, we only recommend things and talk about things on our own, from our own perspective, when truthfully we are using and enjoying those products. So it's really, really cool to hear that, Rambo. And I've also been playing around with some of those Mac Stadium things. And, you know, we've been working on some projects together using it. And yeah, it's always been really great. So head over to macstadium.com/9to5Mac today to learn more and to get started with your own custom Mac solution running in the cloud. Once again, that's macstadium.com/9to5Mac, which also helps support this podcast. Thanks a lot to Mac Stadium for sponsoring this week's episode of Stacktrace. All right, Rambo, it's time. Let's talk about the iPad. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people were expecting this to be a big year for iPad. And I would say maybe it's like a medium-sized year for iPad, right?
Yeah.
Where there were some really good updates, but a lot of them were kind of catching up with the previous announcements last year for iPhone, with specifically widgets, the app library, and so on. But there were also like some really nice new system features like Quick Notes. There was, of course, updates to Swift Playgrounds, which I want to talk about, of course, and the new multitasking UI. So what would you say, like, in general, looking at these new updates to iPadOS, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like it's giving you more excitement about the iPad, or do you feel something else?
I kind of feel something else. I was expecting more. And this is not to say that the new stuff is not great. Like, I love pretty much everything that's been announced for the iPad. But I think everyone was expecting something more substantial or some like switch of direction given the M1 iPad Pro. But at the same time, like, we could see that in 15.1, 2, 3, 4, 5, who knows? So they have released significant new software features after like the first release in the past. So I wouldn't say that, oh, there's no Final Cut for iPadOS. They can announce this at any time. Like, it doesn't have to be at dub. So I'm happy. I was expecting a little bit more, but yeah, the stuff we got is really good. Did you see that app library animation on the dock? Like, that's some seriously cool stuff.
Yeah, very, very nice. I think the best way you can kind of describe the iPad situation is that it's kind of stuck in a box, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are these like walls, narrow walls that you just can't escape. And everything needs to take place in an app. So when we're talking about something like Swift Playgrounds, which adds now support for building applications, and you can even submit them to the App Store, like, that is very cool. Like, the fact that you can now use the iPad to build an application, that's fantastic. Like, that's something that I've been saying that I've been wanting for a while, that I think in order for the iPad to become, like, a more proper computing platform, it needs to be able to write software for that same platform, right? Include, like, not just including prototypes, but actual applications, and that seems to be happening. But it's still just, like, within this one application, and it's like, very constrained and confined to just what this application can do. You cannot extend that in any way. Like, again, I hate to always compare it to the Mac, but this is, like, the best comparison, right? Because the Mac does not have that problem where it's not in this, like, narrow box. It's more open, and you can do many more things with it. And if you have something like some of Apple's developer tools that you don't like, or you don't want to use them for some reason, or you want to do something different that they don't support, you can just use another tool, right? Yeah. You can just write your own tool. You can write some command line utility or whatever. Like, there's so many opportunities, but on the iPad is just not possible. So the iPad remains in this little box, even though the features they introduce are all great, and I welcome it, and especially the Playground stuff. And I will try to build, like, an application from the ground up in Swift Playgrounds on the iPad and just see how far you can kind of push it and what it supports. I will definitely try that.
By the way, great opportunity there for developers. If you want to get some press for an app, try to make an app from zero to shipping to the App Store in Swift Playgrounds. If you include that in your press release, there's a good chance people will pick that up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am excited about that. And I think the multitasking features as well look, like, really good. Like, they look like they've kind of taking a big leap forward in terms of the overall usability of multitasking. These kind of awkward gestures you previously had to do were awkward. So it's really great to see improvements there. But still, I think nothing has really changed in terms of what the iPad is as a platform. And I think maybe from Apple's perspective, that's by design. They don't want it to change. Or from certain users' perspective, that's great too, because they like the simplicity of iPad OS. But as someone who wants to use the iPad more for different things and wanted to become a more powerful device, especially with the new hardware, it kind of still feels a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, that is true. But the new stuff is good, like we mentioned. I can't wait to try out the Swift Playgrounds thing, because even though, like, let's be honest, like, I'm not going to be writing my apps in Swift Playgrounds this year, or probably not even in the next 5 years. But just having that ability is super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also kind of democratizes app development in a different way, right? Where you can get an iPad, I'm not going to call it cheap, right? But you can get an iPad for way less money, let's just say that, than a Mac. And there's a lot of people who already have iPads who don't want to spend the additional money just to be able to try to build apps to see if that's something they would be into. So being able to do that on the iPad just unlocks app development for a lot more people, which I think is a great thing.
And I suppose that being more integrated and being an iPad experience, it's going to eliminate a bunch of roadblocks that you face when you want to make apps. Like, I got asked a lot from people, how do I make my first app and release it on the App Store? And with Xcode, there's a lot of stuff you have to go through. And I'm not saying that, like, if you want to be a professional developer, you shouldn't learn all of that stuff. But if a person is just getting started and they have this dream project and they can manage to do it all on an iPad and actually ship it to users, that's amazing. And of course, they can learn Xcode later. And if they want to work at a company, they're going to have to learn Xcode. But, like, to get started with, this is amazing. And I can see a future where maybe you can even, like, sign up for the developer program from within Swift Playgrounds. You don't even have to launch Apple's website to do it. So, yeah, this is super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really awesome. And I think what we're probably going to see in the long run is there needs to be different tools for different audiences. And app development, if we want it to become something that more people can get into, I mean, APIs like Swift UI and so on that have been introduced that are, you know, from some perspective, easier to use than what was before, is great to get more people into the community and to be able to try it out. But then the tooling aspect is also equally important to be able to have, like, a proper editor and environment where you can actually build your project. And I think what we will see is different tools for different audiences. So like you mentioned, just because Swift Playgrounds can now build apps, it doesn't mean that every single developer on the planet will start using Swift Playgrounds to build their applications.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. Like, that doesn't mean that Swift Playgrounds is a failure, and that doesn't mean that Xcode, you know, will always be better or whatever. Like, they're just two different tools. And the way I can kind of, you know, think about this, I love cooking personally. Like, I cook almost every day, and I love learning recipes and trying things out.
Same.
And I cook for my friends when I can, and you know, when we can meet again and so on. But you know, I would never want to work in a restaurant. Like, I don't want to do that. But it would be a shame if my kitchen wouldn't support me making dinner just because I don't want to work in a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And I think that maybe the analogy is starting to break down here, but this is kind of how I see this, is that if you want to get started, maybe just build an app for fun, or maybe you just want to like take your first step into becoming a more professional app developer, it's great to have tools like this. But the more kind of quote-unquote pro tools, like the restaurants in my example, like the restaurant-grade kitchens, still need to exist as well, right? So That's why I think it's good to have both Swift Playgrounds and Xcode. I just wish that we would also have Xcode on the iPad, but maybe this is asking too much right now.
Yeah, and we speculated about Swift Playgrounds offering full app building in the past, and we never actually came as far as imagining submitting to the App Store. Like, the most we came up with was like, oh, maybe there's this little app gallery within Playgrounds itself where you can share your Playgrounds app with other people within Playgrounds, but no, you can actually publish for real to the real App Store. So this is super cool. I can imagine maybe Apple will have like a featured section built in Swift Playgrounds. Because I remember when Swift was introduced, the first few apps that were released, which were written in Swift, got like a little feature in the App Store. So yeah, this is a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's also going to be really interesting to see what types of apps that get created through this tool. Like, again, when you unlock some of those hurdles, whether it's like having to buy a Mac or having to fiddle around with Xcode Select or derived data and stuff like that, right? Like, what type of developers that can then get into building apps and what they can build? I'm quite sure that we will see maybe some kind of different styles of apps when kind of more creativity can be unlocked, which I am really excited to see in general.
Definitely.
Great. So then Apple did what they sometimes do, which is that they announced a bunch of features under the iPad umbrella, which are not really just iPad features, right? Like Things like Notes, like the new Quick Notes feature, which is also available on the Mac. Translate, I believe, is not just on iPad. It's a system feature, right? That is also on iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And all the privacy stuff that they talked about as well, it's also not just on iPad. So there was a little bit like, you know, intertwining these things. And of course, everything is all connected. But are there any of those features that you would like to talk about more in more detail, Rambo?
First of all, the best feature was how Craig changed his tone of voice. Like,
You're right.
It was really funny. Like, and this is iPad and we love it. Let's talk about privacy. Here at Apple, we really respect it. It was interesting.
When he got into the privacy dungeon there, like he was jumping through the hole.
Yeah, so I think my favorite thing here, the iCloud Plus stuff is great. There's the private relay for email as well and for web browsing. They're going to be highlighting which domains an app contacts. So you can see like, oh, this app is contacting this tracking service way more than its own API. What's going on here? Which is usually right. The case, to be honest. But what I liked the most in this segment was the new Siri stuff. So every year at DubDub, pretty much every year, I think, they go on stage and they say that Siri is now better. And it's not. Like, it's almost never like a significant change. More recently, the new voices are super cool. I am using one of the new voices on all of my devices and I love them. But this year, I think this has been the biggest improvement to Siri in this recent history, like that I can remember.
It's like what they always say when they introduce something new. It's the biggest improvement to Siri since Siri.
Yeah, which is on-device voice recognition. And not only that, but it can actually do everything on-device, basically. And everything in quotes here, because, of course, there's things that require an internet connection, but there are lots of things it can do offline now. But the biggest difference I've noticed, and I did try Siri on both my iPhone and the HomePod mini with the new betas, is that it's a lot faster because it's doing it on device. So there's like when you're doing simple things like adding a reminder or asking for the weather, which I guess has to call an API, but it's probably already cached or like the internet is fast or something, but there's no delay. Like you ask it and you finish speaking and in less than 1 second you get an answer. And before it would be like you say something and then 5 minutes later the what you said appeared on screen. And I'm exaggerating, of course, but like it would take a long time between you saying the command or asking the question and an answer coming back. And I've had a different experience now with the new Everything 15, like HomePod OS, tvOS 15, and iOS 15. It's a lot better. It's a lot faster.
Yeah, that sounds really great. And I think this is the way it was kind of supposed to be from the beginning, but they just needed all of that kind of machine learning to take place for the neural engines to get rolled out and for them to get powerful enough to be able to do everything on device, right? Because of course, this is what you want. You want to parse the query on device and then not just send a plain text or an audio file to the server, but you actually want to send more like a command, right? Mm-hmm. Like something that the server should do and return it. So you're not just using your voice as a REST API, but you're actually like parsing everything on the client and then sending a different request to fetch the data you need. Or to your point, if you already have it cached, you can just immediately surface it. And I feel like this has been, you know, a interesting thing to compare with Siri over the years is it actually faster to ask Siri than to go ahead and type it into your search engine or actually look it up yourself? And at least like when using it on slower devices like the Apple Watch, setting a timer, like it's usually faster for me to just take up my phone from my pocket and set the timer on my iPhone than to ask Siri on the Apple Watch. But, you know, hopefully these things will improve now that there's on-device voice recognition. And I think this is definitely the direction that Siri should be heading. I spoke about earlier that the iPad is in like a box, and I feel like Siri is in an even smaller box where you were looking at the demos they were doing, like, here, I'm going to do a bunch of commands back to back and you can see how fast it is. But the commands are all like these like command line style commands, right?
Yeah.
Like turn on dark mode, set an alarm for this, like perfectly, like perfect syntax basically, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping will happen, and perhaps this move now to moving things on device and these sorts of things will perhaps accelerate this effort, is I want Siri to be able to support more kind of complex queries. Like if I would ask like, what's the link I shared with Rambo last night? Or what's the playlist Rambo sent me 2 months ago? Like those kinds of queries would be great for Siri to support. And it's not a lot of that. Like currently it's like, it's a voice-based command line basically.
Yeah, that is true. There have been a few new commands. Like you can now do HomeKit commands, but like timed. And this is something I actually intuitively tried a while back and it didn't work. And I was mad that it didn't work. So you can say like, hey, Dingus, turn off the upstairs lights at 8 p.m. or something. Like you can say like, do this thing at this specific time, which I think is really great.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. So it's great that they're making advancements. But yeah, I still think there's long ways to go until we will have the true AI in our pockets.
But haven't we rescued Siri? Because the original HomePod, when you plugged it in for the first time, it said like, hi, I'm Siri. It's great to be out of that box.
Right. Looks like it's back in the box. All right. So I think we can move ahead here a little bit again. So there was a bunch of announcements related to health and watchOS and fitness and so on. These are interesting and good announcements, but you know, if we want to keep things a little bit more developer focused, and also we're already running quite late here, so it would be nice to dive into some other features as well. Should we move ahead to macOS perhaps, Rambo? What do
Let's
you think?
Let's go. Yeah, absolutely.
So macOS, there is macOS Monterey, which I will probably spend a whole next year learning how to spell. What about you?
I mean, I had more problems with pronunciation because at the keynote when Craig said it, sometimes it sounded like monorail to me. Like,
oh, right. Yeah. That would be funny. Mac OS monorail.
Monorail, because it's like, yeah, so Monterey, I think you should emphasize the T there. I think it's a good continuation of what they've been doing with macOS. It's not like Big Sur, of course, because Big Sur was a huge redesign, but there's a feature there that, like, you know, I mentioned everybody Sherlocked with the AirPods thing, which was not really true, but they did kind of, sort of, maybe Sherlock a feature of everybody.
Right, they did, right? They Sherlocked, if you want to call it that, the Magic Handoff.
Yeah, so Magic Handoff on AirBuddy is this feature where you can take like a magic mouse from one of your Macs running AirBuddy and you can transfer it to the other Mac. And of course, no one's gonna believe me because I should have mentioned this before, but I actually had at some point thought about doing it in a very similar way to what they announced, like where you could basically move your cursor to the side where the other Mac is in and it would transfer the thing. But I stumbled upon how do I know which side the other device is on? And the answer is you don't. Like, they don't know the side. The way it works is when you move your cursor to the edge of the screen, it finds like the nearest iPad or Mac and goes to that. Like, doesn't matter which side it's on. So it's kind of literally a magic trick, because if you think about it, 99% of people will have two devices. Like, they'll have a Mac and an iPad, for instance. And the iPad is going to be to one side of the Mac. And they're going to naturally drag the cursor to that side, and it's going to work. And they're not going to think about how it doesn't know which side it is. So this is super clever. And the reason I mentioned Sherlocking is, of course, because this is pretty much what AirBuddy does with Magic Handoff, but better in many ways. But it's not exactly the same thing, technically, because it doesn't actually transfer the device to the other Mac. In the case, because everybody only runs on Macs, so that's what matters here. So I still think that for some niche use cases, the feature in AirBuddy still makes more sense, because this is really designed to be like a, at least from what I see, to be like a quick thing where you just, oh, I want to do something quick on my iPad, I can just drag the mouse over or drag files between them. But it's not supposed to be like, oh, I want to move my keyboard and mouse over to the iPad and use them for like 10 hours. Or I want to take my Mac elsewhere and keep using my Magic Keyboard and trackpad with my iPad. It's not actually transferring the device. It's basically streaming your HID input from the Mac to the other device in real time.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny with this whole Sherlocking thing where I feel like people scream Sherlocking very quickly, right? Like, they
too
see
much.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely overused, and they see something that's just like remotely resembling the same thing, and they're like, "Oh, it's Sherlocked," right? And I think it's important to try to not be so over dramatic with these things, like, because even if it would be literally the same feature, it doesn't mean that AirBuddy's dead, right? It doesn't mean that you should stop working on Magic Handoff and it's now pointless for you to work on it. Because we've seen this, and we talk about this every time this comes up, it feels like, but we've seen many times where Apple introduces some system feature, and yeah, some of the sales perhaps from this other third-party application is removed or disappears because people just use the built-in feature instead. But a lot of the times it will just like lead people to discover that this is something that you can actually do with your devices and yeah. will sometimes even increase the sales of third-party applications. So I think it's important to like not draw too dramatic conclusions from announcements like this. And of course, like you mentioned, this is something that is works different and people can pick whichever way they prefer. Do they prefer just a built-in system one that lets you temporarily use your mouse and keyboard with another device, which I think is awesome. Like the fact that you can do it and you could have like multiple devices on your desk and you can just have one set of a keyboard and mouse and just move them across devices like a magic trick, like you said, or do you want to move it more permanently, which is, I mean, you move it and transfer the ownership, like you said, which everybody does. And maybe you want to use both in combination and that's fine too. So yeah, I don't think we need to draw some conclusion what this means for everybody right now, like the day after WWDC.
Yeah, and my philosophy on this, at least when it comes to everybody, is basically I kind of, from the beginning, wanted to be Sherlocked. Like, I'd love for Apple to Sherlock everybody completely so that I can go work on something else. Not because I don't like working on everybody, but I basically built a system feature, I knew going in that this is something that would probably be implemented at some point, and it honestly hasn't yet. Like, Big Sur improved things a lot with auto-switching and the new menus. This improved the handoff situation, but the whole app experience has not been Sherlocked yet, but I kind of wish it was. So we'll see what happens. But if I had built an app that was exclusively the magic handoff feature, then that would be a bigger issue, because then, like, it would be like the entire reason of the app existing that was replaced. But at the same time, like, there are people who wish to stay on older OSs, so this is not gonna work on Mojave or Catalina or even Big Sur. So yeah, hasn't been Sherlocked yet. Kind of wish it was, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and it goes back to another thing I think we've mentioned several times, which is, if you want to build these more kind of utilities or system level features as a product, build an actual product, not just one feature, right? Like, build a product that has a suite of features that, if one of them gets quote unquote Sherlocked or implemented on a system level, then your product still has a reason to exist and a reason for people to buy it, because it also has these other features as well, and maybe can connect them in a different way and so on. So yeah, there are definitely different strategies to take here. And absolutely what you mentioned there as well, around that not everyone upgrades on day one. And this is, again, not such a dramatic change that sometimes people make it out to be. And I see the same thing when I discuss code with people. When, for example, there's a new async image now being introduced in Swift UI, which lets you download or render downloaded images that are downloaded over the network, which is a really welcome change. I believe is this the first time there's been a built-in API for rendering an image from a URL?
I think so.
There might be.
I think there was one for tvOS only.
Right. Yeah. Right. But on iOS or macOS, like multi-platform like this, right? Like, I think this is the first one.
Yeah.
So this is great news, right? 2021, the year when you can finally download images from the internet. it's really great to see. But, you know, sometimes then I see people talk about these things like, oh, I will throw out my library that does this and use the built-in solution. And yeah, that's great if you only want to support iOS 15, right?
Yeah.
So these things are transitions that take place over time, and there's no need to be super dramatic about them.
Yeah, and also, just as with features, when Apple implements something like this, they usually do like the basics that people need.
Yeah.
So if you use one of these libraries and you use like a more advanced feature of the library, like some libraries let you like put up a placeholder automatically. And I mean, maybe the built-in one does that as well. I'm just giving some examples. And sometimes they have some like advanced resizing options and things like that, which the built-in one doesn't necessarily do. So yeah, you really need to evaluate how you're doing things. I do have, like, I've rolled my own async image thing for Chibi Studio for the timeline, and I am considering, like, I'm not sure if I'm going to bump to iOS 15 as the requirement anytime soon, but I'm considering, like, shimming this API and then, like, calling the built-in API on iOS 15, because I do expect, like, that the built-in API will be more reliable than anything I can write by myself. Famous last words again, but yeah, I'll try.
Right. Yeah, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about around Swift Playgrounds versus Xcode, right? Like, the fact that there's a built-in API is great because it provides a starting point. And if you don't have a lot of advanced requirements and you can support the latest operating system versions in this case, then it's great that it exists, right? It's great to have that built in, especially for something that's so core to building a modern application as downloading an image from the internet is. But then that doesn't mean that everyone will be able to use that, because Apple will almost never build like a super customizable solution that anyone can use, and it gives you super low level control over everything, they will typically lean more towards building the more higher level, easier to use APIs. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just means that it's still an opportunity for open source libraries to exist, for third party solutions to exist. And that will probably be always the case and back and forth. And like, for example, when Codable was being introduced, I had two of my own libraries, Unbox and Wrap, that did JSON encoding and decoding. And I kept them around for like 2 or 3 or 4 years or something like that, even after Codable was announced, because Codable wasn't yet as powerful to support those use cases that I wanted from my JSON encoding and decoding. Mm-hmm. But then once it did, then I deprecated those libraries and now I just use Codable. So nice. It's okay for these transitions to take place over time. That's kind of the organic way of things. That's the circle of life of code.
Yeah. Also on the Mac, we got a big Safari update. The user interface is one of those things where you have to use it and see if you like it. Like, this is the type of redesign that at first glance, most people are like, ugh. Like, this is weird. Like, when I launched it for the first time and all of my pinned tabs were, like, at the top, collapsed, I didn't immediately like it, but I'll have to use it more to see if I like it. One thing we didn't mention for Safari was, on iOS, the navigation bar is now at the bottom of the screen, which is really interesting. And you can do gestures, like to switch between tabs, kind of like you can do in the app switcher, where you can switch between apps. They've basically implemented the same fluid gestures for tabs within Safari, which is interesting. I'm still not quite used to it, but I think I like it on iOS. So we'll see what I think of it in the Mac. What do you think about that?
So I haven't had a chance to use it myself yet, but just looking at the screenshots, I think it looks great. Like, I'm really looking forward to trying this out. I'm not one of those people who have like super strong opinions about my web browsers. I typically use all the web browsers because I have like different client projects and different browsers to have like separation of concerns. And I use different browsers for web development and, you know, I just use them all, right? So I don't typically care so much about the UI of the web browsers because I just use so many different ones. So I'm just really looking forward to trying this out. I'm trying to kind of keep an open mind about it. Around the iOS implementation and the navigation bar moving to the bottom, I think that is a really interesting, cool move. And we saw this happening first in Maps, a couple of years ago, where the search field moved to the bottom. And I think, like, as the phones get bigger and as, like, much of the interaction moves to kind of the bottom half of the phone, where, you know, you're swiping up to move to the home screen and things like that, like you mentioned, I think it feels kind of natural to also move the navigation to the bottom, or at least, like, try it out. And this is a really interesting kind of very large-scale experiment in that sense. Like, it obviously worked out for Maps, so hopefully it will work out here as well. And overall, like, if more things move to the bottom of the phone, I think that could just be great for just overall ergonomics.
Yeah, and it's really nice. Like, I'm actually playing around with it. Like, the gestures are super nice. Like, this is the sort of stuff you want to play around with. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying this on the iPhone. And also, something else I noticed here, I have two pages open, and one of them was a link you sent me over iMessage to your article, and another one is from our friend Casey Liss. He sent me on iMessage, and I opened both, and at the top, it actually shows like your little avatar, really tiny avatar from John, and the other shows from Casey. So yeah, that's really nice that it keeps that context around. So if I'm looking at this article tomorrow or like a few hours later, I know the context of where it came from.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. It again feels like one of those features where the system is just more aware of what's going on the whole device, right? Yeah. That it's not just these silos of information, which I think is really great. Mm-hmm. Rembo, I'm thinking like this. So we've already discussed like a lot of topics here now on this episode. And I think one thing we haven't touched so much yet is the kind of more lower level code level things like around concurrency, around like some of the new frameworks being introduced are Swift only, which I think is really interesting to talk about as well, and what that might mean for like Objective-C compatibility and so on. Like, there's a lot of other topics we want to talk about. Test Lite on macOS, maybe dive more deeper into that. But I'm thinking, how about we wrap it up here and then we make our next episode more kind of code focused? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so this was the keynote episode, and the next one is going to be the State of the Union episode.
the State of the Union slash us discovering things slash spelunking slash having fun episode.
Absolutely.
That's going to be the title. Very long title. All right. But thanks so much, everybody, for listening to our WWDC special. I hope you enjoyed it. And like we always like to mention after these announcements, and we've mentioned it a few times already, but we will continue to explore and investigate and report back to you our findings and talk more about many of these announcements in more detail over the coming weeks. So we know we didn't manage to cover everything. If we didn't manage to cover your favorite feature, then sorry about that, but always feel free to email us or send us a tweet if there's something in particular you'd like us to talk more about in detail. You can use the hashtag AskStackTrace to ask us questions about any of the new announcements, and we will definitely pick up those things and try to talk about them more on future episodes. We would also like to thank our two great sponsors for this episode, which were MacPaw and MacStadium. Thanks to them for helping us make this episode possible. And if you have a couple of minutes, feel free to check them out, as that really helps support our show. It's very easy. You can find links to them in the show notes. It takes just a few minutes, and you do really help support us. You can also tweet about the show if you like it, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or just get in touch and tell us what you think about the show. But that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. So say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.